the same within the border. This is law and order. Money makes you poorer. Like a corrosive liquid on the soul. Select the Yeshua. Doesn't need a health bar and your new car. Doesn't need a mini bar. It's what you need to a little touch of leaf and more loophole. The rich get as the gold comes, pension is up at warm. A hundred around a campfire outside the circle. Spendy pennies wise, you expect a hierarchy. No red bombs explode, they liberate the soul.
Greetings one and all, and a very warm welcome to Dr. Rock's radio show here on msiradio.com and scotlandisfree.ning.com. We've got an interesting show for you tonight, I think, bit of variety. We've got some chat about Stonehenge, which I find very interesting. We're on show 99 of the Dr. Rock radio show now, and this is a recall really way back to show number one, where I talked a bit about the Stonehenge Free Festival, my love for the place and for the festival, and my extreme disappointment at what happened there so many years ago. In recent times, there have been quite a lot of rumours about what's been going on at Stonehenge with the land, with the development, with who's going to be doing what, and the rest of it. And as many of you will know, I spent last weekend at the Truth Juice Gathering, where we stayed at a place called the Stonehenge Campsite. Took the place over for the weekend and had a really great time, actually, of which more a little bit later. As it was, though, on the way home, I had a chance to catch up with Robin Maria Foster, who has joined us in the chat box tonight. Hiya, Robin. It's great to see you there. And it gave me a chance to catch up with some on-the-ground information as to what is actually going on. Gave me a chance to check out a few rumours and all the rest of that. And I'm not going to bore you too much with the introductions. I think I'm going to move on more or less straight away. In fact, straight away to the chat that I had with Robin. And then I'll be back with you a bit after that with some comments about some of the people involved. And we'll take it from there, basically. Thanks, of course, to Rubber Ducky for doing such a grand job at warming everybody up. It was much more interesting than listening to the podcast music, it has to be said. The last band we heard there was Smiling Ivy, playing a track called Gagging Order, and before that, of course, Dr. Feelgood, ZZ Top, and Catatonia putting horses' heads in people's beds. But now, something much more local. Conversation that Dr. Rock had with Robin. Of course, if you've got any questions, you can put them in the chat box, and Robin will hopefully be able to answer them for you. I'll be back with you in roughly half an hour or so. I wonder if we could start by having a quick talk about how it got into private ownership. Because for me, it's really synchronicitous that only like a couple of days ago, I was sent a website which told me that some guy around here thinks he owns Stonehenge. And I was pretty appalled that that had happened, but it seems like it's been in private hands for most of its recent life, at least. Is that right?
The Bruce family owned it up until about mid-18th century, 1860, 1830, something like that. Mm-hmm. I have the facts in here, you see.
Ah, brilliant. I mistakenly think that it's a national monument, you know, in the hands of the people.
All right, okay. 1824.
Right.
It was part of a 5,000-acre estate owned by the 4th Duke of Queensbury. On his death, it went to his son, Sir Edmund Antrobus. And he was persuaded by the Bishop of Clifford, Bishop Clifford of Clifton, to put a fence up around it.
So what have the Romans got to do with it?
Well, the bishop was also the first president of the Wiltshire Antiquarian Society.
Okay.
And he persuaded Edmund Antrobus to put a fence up.
Right.
And start charging, and basically to keep the Druids out.
Yeah.
Because that was what was happening. The Druids had been using it for quite some time already.
Mm-hmm.
They considered it was part of their heritage to do so.
And there are public rights of way leading to it.
Yeah. And the 4th Duke of Queensbury, he was quite fine with the Druids using, and didn't put any restrictions on movement for the public or for the Druids. And it was his son that was persuaded by the bishop that keep the Druids out, make a fast buck.
I see. So the family had become quite happy with this, as indeed they should be,
yeah,
with it being what it is. And it was the Roman Church who...
The government wanted to purchase it.
Okay.
And they were refused. And then the Antrobus family offered it to them in 1896, I think,
mm-hmm,
for lots of money, £135,000.
Right.
And the government said, no.
Mm-hmm.
And they had been trying to get it... under the Ancient Monuments Commission. They wanted to take it and put it into custodial care.
Yeah.
And they were refusing. So when that Antrobus died and the son inherited, the fence was first put round. And that was the first time the Druids started asking for, can we have a...
So this is the late 1800s, early 1900s?
1894.
Yeah.
In 1898, the estate was passed down to the 4th Baronet, Sir Edmund Antrobus, who was targeted by the Bishop of Clifford.
Right, okay.
Bishop Clifford was the president of the Clifton Antiquarian Club. He erected a barbed wire fence in 1901 and charged admission.
Okay.
The landowner had the police eject the Druids that year.
I'm aware that there's been quite a sustained tension between the Druids, the landowners, and...
Since 1901.
Mm. Yeah.
It's and when the hippie movement arrived, that was the first time the Druids had access into the stones again.
Do you know, I never knew that. I didn't know that, because I went to the Stonehenge Festival for probably 6-7 years on the trot.
So the Druids were very happy that the hippies were there.
Yeah.
They could get entrance for the first time without, because there was a mass of objections to them not being able to go in. And the police very, very cleverly turned it in on themselves. And they said, okay, the Druids, you can come in, but you hippies, you common people, you can't. No, sorry.
Yeah.
But and so the Druids, who obviously are over the moon, because they just want to have their ceremony, they want to access their temple, and they can now for the first time freely.
For 100 years.
Yeah. Mm. And what was happening was the government and the police and Maggie Thatcher
Is that making, it's making a bit of a noise next to the mics. Brilliant. Yeah, they are quite sensitive, yeah. Yeah, Mrs. Thatcher, all of that, I remember that. I remember being very very surprised by the whole thing because it had been going for so long.
And the politics at that time, it suited them very nicely. Mm. So they turned the Druids against the hippies and the hippies against the Druids.
Yeah.
When in actual fact they had been working quite well together for a few years there.
Yeah, yeah. It's again, seems to me to be a standard operational procedure to polarise wherever possible. Yeah.
So a few agent provocateurs in the mix, stirring up the public.
Yeah.
So all those damn Druids, the elitist Druids, oh dear, dear, dear. And the energy seemed to grow and grow and to the point where the Druids were actually the main bone of contention. Well, hold on a minute. Look at the history book. People didn't have the internet then, so there was no way of knowing what the actual truth was.
No.
Which is our way of practicing worship, our way of connecting to our land, was being oppressed.
Yeah, yeah. As well as the access to it, you know, the access to the works of our ancestors, places where lots of people have had their ashes scattered there, haven't
Look,
they?
It is still an active burial ground.
Mm.
I've witnessed ash scatterings myself, so it's still going on.
People surely have the right to visit their dead.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the other thing that's occurred to me is we've had a lot of talk in the field about lays, which are kind of ways of navigating your way across the countryside, and they use these sacred sites and sacred hills and the like as a means of enabling people to get from one place to another in the days before maps. So in those days, we'd have been able to walk freely to Stonehenge from more or less any direction that we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And now we can't even get to it through the two or three little so-called public footpaths that have been left.
Well, National Trust are currently in the process of disappearing three walkways across the National Trust field to the stone.
Yeah.
They were downgraded from byways to restricted byways, and in 2001 they were just walkways, and in 2006 they were potential walkways, and now they don't exist at all, they're claiming.
But do we have people preparing to walk these paths on a regular basis?
Yes, people have. There's footage on the internet right now of people trying to walk these pathways and being stopped by security.
Really?
Yeah. And they actually have no legal right.
No,
because they're actually obstructing public access.
Yeah.
But there's no one with any clout enough to stop them, it seems.
And are they using uniform sort of branded security for this?
They're using a mixture of fluorescent shirted, you know, the jackets.
Yeah.
And ordinary English Heritage.
Yeah.
Jackets.
This is the thing, isn't it?
But they're always threatening peace and action, and you'll be escorted off. And
just exactly how do English Heritage fit into this? If Stonehenge is... Well, let's first go on to the fact that it did actually get given to the nation, didn't it?
Yes.
Beginning of the 1900s by a character called Cecil Chubb.
Yes.
Who's a barrister, bought it at auction, I gather.
Yes, he was a barrister in law, and he bought it for £6,600.
Which your paperwork reckons is worth about £400,000 or so now.
£392,000 now, yeah. And then he generously gave Stonehenge to the nation on the 26th of October 1918
through a deed of gift.
Yes.
Do we know what a deed of gift is?
Yes, it's it comes with various conditions that must be upheld.
Mm-hmm.
They must be agreed before the deed is signed over.
Mm-hmm.
And the conditions that Cecil Chubb placed on it was that any profit went to the Red Cross.
Yeah.
That it was a donation of a shilling, that local residents got in free, and that Druids retained their access to the stones. Most of those things have been
This is one
forgotten.
Of the interesting things, is it says on there that these covenants are no longer enforceable. I thought these things were perpetual documents.
Technically, that is correct. They had no legal right to ignore those conditions of the deed.
Mm-hmm.
However, at some point, and we can't locate evidence at the moment, we're still looking, somewhere between 1979 and 1982, they created another act bringing more monuments into their protection.
Mm.
And somewhere around that time, the deed of gift became a freehold that the Secretary of State owns. And a freehold allows him to profit from any standing building or anything that's on that land. He can profit by it. He can't profit from the land, but he can profit from the building or structure on that land.
This is something I read about quite a lot, deeds of trust, deeds of gift and thing being just overturned by local councils and the rest.
So those conditions actually no longer apply, but at some point they've taken it upon themselves to award it to themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. So that effectively then the Department of the Environment or the Home Office or whatever...
Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sports.
Yes, indeed. An interesting group of three, I always think.
Yes.
So it's owned by the government corporation then?
Secretary of State has his name is on the freehold, yeah.
And how does National Heritage
fit English
into
Heritage?
English Heritage fit into
all this?
They're
the group of people that collect the money on his behalf.
Okay.
English Heritage's manager, Peter Carson, for Stonehenge, did admit to me that any money raised from Stonehenge goes to the upkeep of private properties held by English Heritage that aren't open to the public.
Brilliant.
I tried for 3 years to get that out of him, but I finally got an admission in an open room meeting.
In an open meeting, was it recorded?
I'm not aware if it was or not.
It's a shame, isn't it, that?
It is.
It's always such, because... These people, in my experience, are not necessarily used to being challenged.
No.
And in open question and answer sessions, quite often, it's not as easy for them to keep control over what they need to say.
I had been asking the same question of him for 3 years before he actually had.
Well, well done you, that's what I say.
He must have had a bad day.
Yeah. There's been a rumour on the internet recently that actually Walt Disney are somehow involved with all of this as well.
This is an incredibly controversial
split down the middle at the moment, whether it's actually
people find it very hard to understand that there is a connection.
That really is most disappointing,
isn't it? The main company of Norman Young and Disney are a firm based in Australia that deal with sites that are going to be event holders, theme parks, that sort of thing.
This is creeping here, it really is. Stonehenge, the bastards.
Yeah. The Disney in the name is a chap that used to be working in America, who was one of the Disney family members who designed all the theme parks in America for Disney.
Okay.
Then he left that firm and went to Australia. That firm is now deeply entrenched in the remaking of the visitor centre and the whole presentation to the public of the World Heritage Site. Now, a lot of people don't believe that Disney could in any way have anything to do with... But clearly the Disney name and Disney money are involved.
Yeah.
The gentleman has actually died now, the Disney that we're talking about.
Yeah. But his corporation will be marching on.
But it's the corporation, yes.
Mm.
So there is a link. It is tenuous because the chap is dead, but we don't know. The name is still on the company.
Right.
So there must be some interest of the Disney family money in there.
We've got a Disney, we've got... A Disney Corp, part of the Disney Corporation. We've got English Heritage and National Lottery too. Good causes, are they genuinely?
Yes, I think they have helped in the financial support of this visitor centre.
One of the good causes includes helping private people take over our national assets from under our feet.
And our sacred temple, because at the end of the day, for pagans, druids and Wiccans, it is our premier temple.
Yeah. And they say a lot of light workers too.
Yes, and light workers, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So what's the plan of action? What have you done so far? You've obviously 3 years, you say, you've been asking the same question. You've obviously been involved for a fair while.
Yes, I used to attend the round table meetings
that
were supposed to liaise between the Druids, and the public and English Heritage, but it became apparent that the meetings that had happened before our meeting is where all the decisions had been made. Any points that were raised by us, the public and the Druids, were swiftly dismissed. Promises made, promises broken. We've discovered financial interests of people that are involved in the running of the event on a summer solstice. I'm not going to name names, that would put me in a libelous position, I think.
No names necessarily on that one. So there are events there again at the summer solstice now, are there?
The whole event is a managed event. You have security and police from the minute you hit the car park. People are searched, there's dogs, there's cameras, there's drones flying over the top, there are massive spotlights that just drown out the temple with light, and the security patrol all night long. They're quite intimidating to a lot of people.
I've had quite a lot of encounters with most unfriendly security, because they're all, of course, G4S and various other people like that.
We did complain quite loudly at... after last year's summer solstice, at the way people had been treated by security, and we received assurances that security firm would not be operating on the summer, but summer came around again, and that same security firm that we had been promised wouldn't be there had been taken from the main gate, where their treatment of the public had been quite foul. They were actually now policing the inner circle, the stones.
Yeah.
So they hadn't gone anywhere. So we were lied to consistently for a whole year by everybody involved in that public meeting. They just told us a pack of lies from start to finish, and people were very upset.
It seems to me to be really grossly unfair, because, you know, by and large, one of the ways, you know, truth seekers, open thinkers, whatever, free thinkers think, is we do tend to try to be honest with each other, try not to upset each other, and try to tell the truth. And it is so difficult when mischief is being used against us perpetually, and there doesn't appear to be anything we can do. But you've come up with some plan of action, haven't you? Are you raising a legal challenge to...
That is my ultimate aim, yes, indeed. Because I feel very passionately that it is our religious rights that are being oppressed.
Yeah.
We have mosques, we have synagogues, we have Catholic churches, we have Scientology, we have churches.
Yeah.
And yet the homegrown ancient Celt religion is not even recognised legally until 2009, when the European Union actually recognised that the Druids do exist in law. It's just a little bit in law. It's to do with charity and the raising of money. But we are now under the protection of the full law.
Yeah.
To recognise us in one fraction of the law, you have to have all the protections afforded by the law.
So have the Druids then sought official recognition under this? It was a new one on me. The Places of Worship Registration Act.
Yes, we have tried that.
Yeah.
We tried that 2 years ago.
Because we kind of know, one of the things we found out is that registering always involves handing over superior rights of guardianship or title.
Yes, we did try this 2 years ago, and the registry office gave it back and said, there's no way you're going to get anywhere with this. English Heritage are the only ones that can submit a claim for place of worship. Well, it's ironic, because on the one hand, English Heritage promote our temple across the world as a sacred site, and yet they refuse to actually honour the sacredness of our site.
Yeah.
On a daily basis, we would like to have access dusk, dawn, new moon, full moon, and their full 8 Sabbaths.
Yeah. Because they're quite strict as well in their definition of what a place of worship has got to be for the purposes of the Registration Act, aren't they?
For the purposes of registering a place of worship, all you need is to prove that there have been more than a handful of people regularly worshipping in that place.
That's really good, because at one point they were seeking to prove that the principal use must be for people to come together as a congregation to worship God or do reverence.
At the moment, the fact that English Heritage traipse 1 million feet around there every year kind of supersedes that very nicely. Well, I would like English Heritage to remove themselves from the site completely. Simon Thurley has proved that his only objective with regards to managing English Heritage is profit. financial profit at the expense of dignity, yeah. respect, honouring the fact that he's taking our site and promoting it globally and yet stripping it of anything that's sacred and dishonouring yeah. the sanctity of the fact that it's a burial yeah. ground.
Surely not saying one thing and doing another.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Typical.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Well, it seems to me to be quite a brave thing to be taking on. Another thing that occurs to me is there must be other places in Albion that are raising similar problems, aren't there?
Not as badly as Stonehenge. Mm. There's talk of Avebury becoming turned into a theme park.
Yeah.
But as yet, the evidence for that is extremely thin.
Once again, I think that we do have the kind of the ratchet effect here, or the kind of like the wedge, the foot in the door, as it were. If quite often we find that if they get away with it in one place, then they unleash it everywhere else. Mm. And of course, Stonehenge is a prime place to be.
When we were doing the Byway campaign to save Byway 12,
yeah.
I saw documents that we were handed as evidence submitted by other parties. So we got to see English Heritage's evidence, the Highway's evidence, the Wiltshire Council's evidence, National Trust evidence. We got to read it all.
Yeah.
And in there was a very clear indication that should the current move to monopolise English Heritage's Stonehenge site, if that succeeds, the model will be run out to Avebury.
Yeah.
Now, because we couldn't keep the evidence because we had to hand it back, and I couldn't photocopy because legally I can't. All you have is
yeah.
is my word and a couple yeah. of others that were lucky enough to read it, that they've actually said that.
I would
have
definitely been tempted to duplicate
yes,
that.
Yes, I didn't want to put myself into a situation.
I know what you mean, but effectively they're saying, you know, we're going to... I mean, I'm surprised they allowed you to see it if they didn't want you to copy it, but they are effectively preventing you from making a case. You know, it is all important information, and what are they there for if not to serve the public?
The reason why we had this information was because we were fighting the closure of Byway 12 yeah, in right. a public inquiry.
Yeah, okay.
The plan was close Byway 12, stop access from either end,
A303,
the A344 and Lark Hill,
yeah,
and close off the whole entire area. So the only way the public can access Stonehenge is through the gate at the visitor centre.
So the Byway 12 got shut?
No, they tried. We won.
Brilliant.
We did win. We had a petition where we collected 800 signatures in a month
yeah.
from people visiting the byway.
Yeah.
King Arthur Pendragon
yeah.
gave evidence. Rollo Mofflin, Archdruid,
yeah.
gave evidence. A lady called Amdraste gave evidence. Byways Trust gave evidence. Lara, which is that's like motor crossing.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Off road.
Off roaders. Yeah. They use it a lot. Yeah. And we all gave evidence. Locals from all the villages gave evidence.
It seems like an insane amount of work to have to do, doesn't it? Just to keep a byway open. It's a byway.
Byways. If people don't wake up to the fact that they're going to lose their local byways and make a claim for that byway, that byway will be lost by 2022, 2024,
yeah.
they're closing any byways that no. If you have a byway near you and you've ever walked it and you'd like to walk it again, get out there and claim it, because if you don't claim it to the council, they will take it.
Yeah, well, that's...
Dorset's lost hundreds of yeah, byways
yeah,
in the last few years. They've yeah. got one main byway left. Yeah.
This is again, very timely, see, because we were talking about this on the show, I think, the week before last, because a friend of mine had been doing a walk, an organised walk with a lot of people. They do one a year, a group of people round Avebury. They decided to do the Avebury cycle this year. And there was one day in particular when everybody who was doing the walk, because they, you know, work in their own paths and routes around, came across footpaths that were closed, or apparently closed, by little bits of encapsulated A4 paper saying you're now entering private ground. Yeah. And since then, Synchro has actually been onto the Wiltshire County Council Rights of Way website, which she says is really clear and apparent. It shows you where the rights of the way are, and they are over these patches of land. So she is planning on walking these peacefully, walking these paths.
A form 130A, you submit it to the council, and you should find that the action is taken on your behalf. Unfortunately, I've tried that, and Wiltshire Council are passing the buck and saying it's English Heritage's problem. I should ask them, but the form 130A doesn't apply to them. I don't think. I have to check. We've only got this information in the last week.
I'll obviously be able to look that up because it's on the record now.
The Byways Trust director advised me that this would be the way to go, and I followed what legally was required of us, and we've been knocked back.
Okay, very interesting. Well, I would, I mean, one of the things I think I'd do is approach it from a trust point of view with some letter heading and stuff suggesting that what we're seeking is excellence in public service or words to that effect.
Yes, the sad thing is that English Heritage are guardians of the land immediately around the temple.
Yeah.
And the field around that temple is owned by the National Trust. But in the last couple of years, National Trust, as of the last couple of months, I think, National Trust have handed over management of this field to English Heritage. So, and it's, hold on, how come National Trust is supposed to be one body and English Heritage is another, and now you're just handing out, you know, who have you got to work in National Trust that's English Heritage's best friend?
Yeah, and why? Who put the trust in National Trust?
Yes.
You know?
And how dare they apply for charitable status for Stonehenge when they show no charity?
No, quite so. Quite so. Well, I certainly look forward to keeping up with what you're doing. Is there anything you think people can do to help out? Because I know a lot of people feel very strongly about Stonehenge. So what can we do to, you know, give you a hand?
At the moment, Free Stonehenge has a Facebook page where all the information that I've gathered for the argument to win, claiming our rights as a religious minority.
Yeah.
Pagan Druids and Wiccans, we are oppressed by the current government. We want our temple back. We want English Heritage out. We want it recognised that you cannot exploit our premier temple any longer. We found the evidence from the beginning, where it started. For years, no one's really known how English Heritage have come to have such a hold.
That's what was mystifying me.
Yes, we've come right down to the bishop, a Catholic bishop, determining the fate of our Druids' religious evolution.
Yeah.
And we have to challenge from this original point. It's no good going just from the mid-80s when the whole social movement erupted and was crushed. It goes before that because they were used. They were in the final overseeing with hindsight of what happened. The whole thing was used to create further division amongst the people and amongst the Druids, who have always in the past been the teachers and the lawmakers and the healers of our tribal societies. So they're a pretty integral part to us reclaiming our cultural history and removing the capitalists that are willing to frack our country into oblivion. Who are they? They're very anti-human. And so how can we as a people unite against just even the smallest of things?
Yeah.
When you put Stonehenge next to fracking, what's more important? Well, fracking. But if we target Stonehenge and free it, I believe we reclaim England.
Yeah.
And that's a big one.
I think that's absolutely a fair point. I think at some point, I mean, I'd agree with you entirely. It goes a long way back. And, of course, it's not just Stonehenge. Our lands were stolen right from under our feet by a foreign invader. Mm. And we are the indigenous people of these islands.
We are, yes.
And we do have a right to our land and to our footpaths and to our byways and all the rest of it. And there have come... The world management team has come precious close to having the whole lot of it. But it is really my feeling that, like the yin and yang thing, you know, when darkness reaches its maximum and there's only one pixel of white left, then you get 2 pixels of white and 4 and 8 and 16. And I really do trust and hope that we can work in this moment to...
Our aim is to be that light shining in the dark at Stonehenge with a free Stonehenge, with as many people as wish to come and celebrate at Stonehenge.
Yeah.
As long as they come with the understanding that they're entering a burial ground of our ancestors.
Yeah. Yeah.
It isn't just a pile of stones to walk around, pay £8 to have a look around, and then go home with no regard to the fact that there are our ancient ancestors buried for miles around, with the central point being Stonehenge. Then you get on to the other point of the ancestors that have been stolen from Stonehenge. That's a whole other conversation.
Yes, that's perhaps another, that's one of the things that King Arthur mentioned when he came to the Truth Juice.
Yes, we've been campaigning a long time for that as well.
Yeah.
The fact that they're not there.
So what,
the
what
guardians
exactly
are
happened?
Taken. The permission was given, a licence was given to Mike Parker Pearson to remove the ancestors from the inner circle of Stonehenge. They now sit on a in a couple of boxes on a shelf in Sheffield University, and have done for the last 5 years. They changed the law and then granted themselves an extension within that law, and then gave them the opportunity to reapply for a licence in 2015. They are under no obligations to return them, and yet we all feel very passionately that the guardians have to be back guarding the stones.
Well, again, grave robbing is a habit of the state.
Robbing,
And the
it's all been glorified by Time Team and other barely interesting TV programmes that sell the pitch that archaeology is great. Look at this, watch this. Oh, we dug up some more gold. Yay, we're great. Hold on, along with that gold, you've dug up a being, a person that was laid to rest. They're resting. Leave them alone. And it's that archaeology is fine if we are actually learning something.
Yeah.
But after years of study, all that Mike Parker Pearson can tell us is that we travelled in great number to Stonehenge, we ate and slept there, we parted in great numbers, we ate hog and deer, and then we went home. That's as much as he's been able to determine for his years of archaeological research.
Yeah.
And so it's great dishonour, again, to the people of this land, put our guardians back in the Premier Temple. They're part of what makes it sacred.
And certainly, I guess, in that case, the best thing we can do with any of these ancient sites, Stonehenge included, is use the byways
use
and the passageways that go to them and visit them.
Be brave enough to ignore the A sign that says private property.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually say no trespassing. It actually says if you walk into the stone circle and break a bit off, we can hold you liable.
Yeah.
That's the extent of their authority in the National Trust field. So you can walk and sit and play in the National Trust field. There is no law to prevent you, but they are trying to tell us that there is. There isn't.
Yeah, as usual, if you cause no harm, loss or damage.
That's right.
And actually, that was noticed about the little notices that are on the footpaths as well, was that it doesn't at any place say it. It doesn't say no trespass. And it doesn't say this is not a public right of way, because you're not trespassing and it is a public right of way. Very good. Well, I look forward to keeping up with you on that, Robin. Thanks very much for giving me a bit of your time.
Thank you.
I think people should be informed about this sort of stuff. And if there is, you know, as we come up with ideas that...
There's a petition on change.org.
Okay.
Requesting that the deeds of gift are honoured and that our religious rights restored.
Yeah.
People want to sign that.
Yeah.
Other than that, anybody with any ideas, we'd like to hold a free Stonehenge party somewhere.
Great.
And make a DVD with bands singing about Stonehenge. That would be,
we're
trying to get that off the ground.
A Stonehenge benefit gig.
That's right.
What a great idea. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Well, if any ideas come up in the chat box, I'll make a note of them and email them to you.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully we'll be able to stay in touch.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that's really great. Thanks for being there. We'll put it on this week.
Brilliant.
Well,
that was me in conversation with Robin, who's kindly joined us in the chat box for the evening. I think it was a pretty clear conversation, really. It did give me a chance to catch up and find out on what exactly is going on there at the moment. I was, some people might remember, I was particularly appalled when I first heard about the news that the Disney Corporation were somehow involved in whatever it was that was going on there, and we heard confirmation that is at least on paper the case. We have a suspicion that they're quite possibly aiming on shutting the whole place off from us. You might have noticed Robin saying that the whilst the monument itself is actually in the hands of English Heritage, that the ground around it, which is quite a large triangular patch of land, was at least until recently in the custodianship, if that is the right word, of the National Trust, if that is the right word. And recently, apparently, the National Trust very conveniently handed all of this stuff over to English Heritage as well. And as you will also have noticed, they're busy trying to shut down the various byways and footpaths that run to this ancient site. The words she used were that they're trying to disappear three walkways, and that these things have been reclassified recently. First, they were originally a byway, then they became a restricted byway, then walkways, and now they're labelled as potential walkways. Now, Robin also gave me a map showing the area around Stonehenge that has been handed over. It's got several bridleways and footpaths across it. Luckily, her group, or the people she's associated with, put up a vociferous defence of a thing called Byway 12, and as a result, the byway is still open, which shows that the presence of individual flesh and blood entities on the ground is important. Now, one of the reasons I think why this is particularly timely is because, as you know, I was chatting with Synchro last week and the week before about the fact that when she was down in Avebury, they found many, many footpaths with notices on them saying, warning you that you're entering private land and that you can't go on there unless you've got the specific invitation of the landowner. And one thing and the other, despite the fact that the local maps on the interweb show that they are still rights of way. Of course, they're still rights of way. And as Robin said there, if you've got a byway that you have walked and that you love and that you hope to walk again, then get out there now and start walking it. I think probably there's likely to be quite a lot of activity from the surgery as we move out into some of these walkways and try to walk them and see what happens. Synchro this very weekend, I suspect, is going to be back down at Avebury taking some photographs of the notices that we saw. Of course, none of them say notice on top of them, folks. None of them say there is no right of way. None of them say no trespass. So once again, what we're looking at is these guys know that we're extremely well trained and extremely well conditioned, and that most people will simply turn away from such a piece of paper or whatever it is and do the other thing. I think that the evidence, again, as Robin said, Dorset's lost hundreds of byways. It's happening in Mid Wales as well, which is otherwise pretty clear land. There's quite a lot of common land here, and there's quite a lot of land that there's miles and miles of land that we can just walk over and nobody can say anything about it. But in a lot of the parts of the country, and we spotted this definitely when we spent 6 months living in Herefordshire, quite a lot of the countryside, the only common land that is left really are the footpaths. I was struck by form 138. Unfortunately, there's a real storm of communication in the 2 hours leading up to the show, so I didn't really get a chance to look at that. Robin said she didn't have a lot of luck with it. I'm wondering what would happen if we were to discover form 138, and instead of filling it in black ink in the boxes, as it were, hence the meaning that the information we're putting on the piece of paper is legally speaking not on the piece of paper but somewhere else. I was wondering what would happen if we started using Billy Maguire's techniques of actually writing this information down in blue ink and sending it into them, whether they might be more likely to take any more notice of us. Because despite the fact that Robin applied to the council with the correct form, she was referred to English Heritage. And English Heritage, of course, are not responsible for the local rights of way. The council are, at least nominally. There were several other things that struck me about our chat there. One was that with the use of that actually the Druids hadn't apparently been able to gain access to Stonehenge for quite a long time before all the hippies turned up and started partying there for, I think, must have been 7, 8, 9 years, something. I know I went there for quite a long time. And with the use of a few agents provocateurs, it was possible to turn the hippies against the Druids and the Druids against the hippies. And one way or the other, one end was played against the other, as we so often see. And as a result of that, they were pretty determined to shut it down that weekend. They dug great big holes in the roads to stop vehicles getting by, machines getting by. They stopped all three of the main roads past Stonehenge. There was traffic absolutely everywhere because, of course, on the summer solstice, there's a lot of people on the road. And, of course, they committed an enormous amount of harm, loss and damage to people, to their property, to their homes. I saw shocking things when I was there. Even more shocking was the fact, for me then, this was a few years back, when was it, 1987, I think? Can't really remember. But I was really shocked when I saw the newspapers the next day. I've still got the cutting somewhere. Every single one of them supporting the breaking of windows on buses and the dragging of pregnant women through them and the injury of really young children and all the rest of it. We saw photographs of them bleeding from the pate and all of that. They were very, very determined to do what they did. I'm pretty convinced that what's going on now is the same process that's occurring, trying to disappear walkways, trying to take our ancient sites off us. It doesn't seem very clear how it was that this deed of gift to the nation was overturned. Once again, this is something I read a lot about, not only in terms of ancient sites, but also in terms of green fields, playing fields, areas of woodland, lots of things that were at one stage or another put into trust for the nation and for the use of the people that live here, for the use of the indigenous peoples. We heard that Stonehenge was somehow bought for £6,600 in order to enable this deed of gift to happen, but that sometime between 1979 and 1982, an act was created that brought more monuments into the nominal protection of the state or its paid lackeys, and that around this time the place became a freehold that was owned by the Secretary of State. It's not been possible for Robin or her team to find out exactly what it was that happened then, and hopefully sooner or later they'll be able to find a little bit more about that. But the covenants that are made when these deeds of gift are brought into existence are not supposed to be undeminable, but we do know, do we not, that even their own laws are no longer being obeyed. I was also interested to hear that the Secretary of State can profit from the buildings or the assets, but not from the land itself. I think there's probably something quite key in that. Robin mentioned a man who was the manager of Stonehenge, Peter Carson, and she spent a fair amount of time, 3 years, I think, asking him various questions about the place. And eventually, I think he possibly lost his job as a result, but eventually he did admit that all the profits that are made from Stonehenge, from the structure that is there, goes to the assets of English heritage that are not open to the public, private assets that are not open to the public. And this was admitted in an open meeting, though, unfortunately, perhaps, not recorded. These managed summer solstice events, I had actually thought about going down to one of those. In a way, I'm quite glad that I didn't, but maybe at the same time, one should. Everybody knows, though, that I have a tendency to make energetic progress in another direction if we're talking about intimidating security, for lots of reasons, really. But she said that there's police, there's private security, everybody's searched, there's dogs, cameras, drones flying over the place, and spotlights that are so bright that they kind of white out the actual temple itself. And she said that the treatment of people was foul. Now, when I went looking at Peter Carson and who he was, I found one of the first things that came up was an article in the Grawniad newspaper, which was up online. Obviously, I didn't go looking at the actual newspaper. And it was an article called, it asked a pair of questions. It said, where are you and where would you rather be? And Peter Carson, in response, said, my team and I are putting the final touches to our plans for the summer solstice celebrations at Stonehenge, which begin on Wednesday night. To see the sun rise over the site on the longest day of the year, in the same way our ancestors would have done, is a very moving moment. And as it does so, the air is filled with cheers, clapping and drumming. The variety of people who attend is very diverse, from archaeologists and historians to druids and pagans. People come to do their own thing within the landscape, whether it be dancing, yoga or meditation. We're expecting about 20,000 people, and I'll be there for the whole night to make sure everything runs smoothly. Well, that is highly different from the description we got from Robin, and I find it a lot easier to believe hers than his, I must admit. And even more scary than that, possibly, is that in answer to where would you rather be, his answer was Machu Picchu. Today's Stonehenge, tomorrow the world, eh? Watch yourself, Peru. The eyes of the administration are upon you. I'll put the link for that into the chat box when I play a bit more music in a few minutes. There were roundtable meetings to liaise between Druids, the public and English Heritage, and I've heard about these meetings before. It's an old industrial principle that if you want to avoid trouble with your workforce, then you make sure they feel that they've been consulted. You don't need to actually pay any attention to what they say. You can just calm them down by consulting them. But Robin said that the decisions had clearly been made in a meeting that happened earlier in the evening or whatever, and that any points that were raised by either Robin's group or the public or the Druids were swiftly dismissed. Many promises were made, many promises were broken. She says we were lied to consistently for a whole year by everybody involved in that public meeting. They just told us a pack of lies from start to finish, and people were really upset. And this is something, is it not, with which we are now completely familiar. It is definitely, and almost, it seems to me, universally, a matter of saying one thing and doing the other. And also I'm aware that, we spend our time telling the truth, we spend our time trying to get proper information across to people, to do so peacefully and to treat people with the love and the respect that they deserve. And what we seem to be getting in return is lies, abuse and mischief. Nonetheless, I think one of the important facts here is that Byway 12 was kept open by the presence of flesh and blood beings, and that really is what we need to do. It's the physical equivalent of writing to the buggers in blue ink, is turning up there and being there. I was a bit stunned by the Places of Worship Registration Act, which says quite clearly in it that none of the stuff in it is supposed to affect the established church, the Church of England. It's quite clear about that. It is for everybody else. And to start with, they were actually looking to make sure that the principal use of any of the places that were going to be so registered was to praise God or do a beatitude of one sort or another. It sounds like that's been relaxed a little bit. If I remember rightly, doesn't it say something in the Bible, for where two or three have gathered together in my name, I am there in their midst, which I think is a far more accurate thing. If people think the place is sacred, then sacred it is. And as Robin says, people have been having their ashes scattered there for a time immemorial. People are still having their ashes scattered there, and there seems to be a desire to get in between us and that. I do think that it's possible that the specifically religious or worshipful approach that's being taken by Free Stonehenge is possibly more likely to get a result than other kinds of approach. But really, I think the more the merrier in that case. I think it's probably correct to imagine that Stonehenge is basically a foot in the door. We've seen this again and again, that if something's actually pulled off in one place, then it will be rolled out. This is a standard method of the management team that we find ourselves facing. Arthur Pendragon actually came to the Truth Juice gathering and read a statement about all of this, which I didn't get a copy of, unfortunately, and he scuttled off quite quickly. I think he would have been very popular if he'd stood around and had a chat with people, but clearly he'd come to do a job. We'll just have to see how all of this moves on. I gather that the lovely man that runs the campsite where the Truth Juice gathering was held has agreed that a sort of Stonehenge benefit party, as it were, can happen there. There's reasonable prices being offered and all the rest of it, and it's certainly a great place. He's got a couple of fields as well as all the things that you'd associate with a campsite. So obviously I'll be keeping in touch with Robin on that and hopefully making my way to it whenever it is. I think it would be a shame to shirk such an event. But in the meantime, there are other opportunities. The autumn equinox this year is on... I'll just find all the right, but I want to make sure I get this right, because as usual, it's a little bit complicated. The autumn equinox is at 8:45 at night this year on the 22nd of September, so you can ignore what it says in the several diaries that I've looked at that says that it's on the 21st. But I gather that people who turn up at dawn on the 21st, if there's enough of them, will be given access. Obviously, as Robin says, there needs to be a degree of respect and peacefulness, but I know that that would be the case from any TNS or Scotland Is Free people that turn up, because it's in the diaries as the solstice, as the equinox. If you arrive at dawn and there's enough people, then it's highly likely that access will be granted. I should think it'd be quite difficult to stop if there's lots of people, so I really would encourage people to spread the news about that one. The actual equinox itself, as I said, is on the 22nd of September at 8:45 in the evening, not at dawn. And the same thing applies there. There is actually a kind of permission reserved to enable people to access the stone circle, as long as there's enough people turn up to do that. And on the 23rd, English Heritage have what they call managed open access. And I gather from talking to Robin earlier that the security's a lot less stringent on the equinoxes than it is at the summer solstice, when people traditionally turn up. As we say, there's like maybe 20,000 people turning up for that. Sometimes for, you know, a few thousand turn up for the equinox events. But seriously, it seems to me that if we want to keep any of our sacred sites, then Stonehenge is something of a keystone, and something that it would be really helpful if we paid attention to it. Also, of course, there's the Facebook page, which is called Free Stonehenge. So anybody that's in your Facebook, do get along there and offer your support, find out what's going on, and you can possibly spread the news to the rest of us who aren't kind of in there. Also, I discovered that it's not just the footpaths that are being closed. Again, I'll put the link for this in. I'll play some music in a couple of minutes. But the work permanently to close a main road running alongside Stonehenge has started. Traffic has been stopped from using a section of the A344 next to the stones, and they're planning on digging it up and grassing it over, presumably to make it a little bit more difficult for people even to see it, I would imagine. The road's been closed in both directions between the Airman's Cross and the A303, the fork in the road that runs either side of Stonehenge. And drivers are advised to follow a diversion via the A360. English Heritage wanted to close the road, they say, to restore the dignity of a World Heritage site. Dogs, floodlights, drones, private security. Don't come to me with your restore the dignity nonsense. Peter Carson from English Heritage said the move would also improve the experience for visitors. That, of course, is visitors who are willing to pay, folks, not visitors who are simply busy burying or visiting, scattering ashes or visiting the ashes of people already scattered. And Carson said, the stone circle and the avenue that links it with the landscape will at last be reunited, which means people can explore the wider landscape and see the wonderful archaeological features contained within. Well, you can see, can you not, that exploring the wider landscape is definitely not what this is all about. Keeping us out in the wider landscape might be. But so long as you pay the Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, you'll be able to explore the place. If not, you can forget about it, really. Also, interestingly, just before the show, Robin tells me that as from the 1st of September, the new chairman of English Heritage, who are the group of people or the corporation or whatever they are that have taken responsibility now not only for Stonehenge but for the ground around it, is going to be a chap called Sir Laurie Magnus, who is currently the deputy chairman of the National Trust. Now, isn't that cosy, eh? So there we go, Free the Stonehenge Facebook page. There's a petition on change.org, and there's going to be a Free Stonehenge party, a kind of Stonehenge benefit gig. And as soon as I hear anything about that, I shall, of course, bring the news to you. And who knows, it might be a chance for some of us who haven't met face-to-face to meet face-to-face, do a bit of dancing and singing and a bit of celebrating, as well as supporting a group which I think is doing grand work, really. Remember, if it hadn't been for these guys, we'd already have lost Byway 12. And more help's needed. Of course, we'll be adding our sixpenneth as we go out and try to explore some of the other byways and paths that are being closed. There are some villages down in Wiltshire, it seems pretty clear, all of whose pathways have been shut off unless you have the personal permission of the person who deems themselves to have title to the land to cross a way that has been crossed by our ancestors for thousands and thousands of years. Also, some of you might remember that I spoke with Lawrence Main on the show last week on the subject of lays. These are lines that run across the countryside between sacred wells and hill forts and various other things. And they used to be fundamentally a means of navigation, a subject which I hope to cover in a future show when I have the authors of a book called Megalithic Empire on, who've got some very alternative ideas as to just exactly what our history is in this subject. But in those days, those lines were walkable. We could go everywhere. There wasn't anywhere where we couldn't go. And then bit by bit, the land has been seized. We are the indigenous people of these lands. They herded us onto various public footpaths and byways. And now they're trying to turn them into what they call potential walkways. I don't know whether anybody's got any idea in law what a potential walkway is, but it doesn't sound very promising to me. Well, thanks very much, Robin, for that. That was really great. And I will keep in touch with you. And please do let me know anything that comes up. You know I'm interested. You've got my number and everything. You have my full support. And I'm sure the full support of many of the people at MSI as well. Don't forget that if it happens at Stonehenge, their intention specifically, another named site is Avebury, which is much bigger. And once again, there has already been a fair bit of change there. It used to be, I gather just from the chat box tonight and also from friends of mine, that it used to be a lot easier to stay overnight at Avebury than it is now. I think I'm right in saying that it's actually quite difficult to find even a campsite near Avebury now. So bit by bit, it's already being made a lot more difficult for us to get to other places as well. And it's not just Stonehenge and Avebury, it's all the rest of them as well. The thing is that, like Lawrence Main said, the land wants us to visit it. These sacred sites were built to be visited. They were there to affect human beings and to be affected by them. And the land dies through not being paid attention to. I remember reading a book, actually, I think it was called The Nickelodeon Player, I could be wrong there, but it was basically suggesting that these sacred sites orchestrate the visiting of people at given times of year, because it requires consciousness, it requires living entities to be there to help the energies of the earth do whatever it is that the energies of the earth are trying to do. So visit your ancient sites, walk your byways, get out on the footpaths, especially good at this time of year. There's some really great things to eat out in the countryside. And let the people who need to know that we haven't forgotten. What I'm going to play next, I'm going to play a couple of tunes now, 7 or 8 minutes worth of tune. The first of which is a very apposite track, I think, called Your Land by a young man called Bobby Birdie, who was at the Truth Juice gathering. He sent me this tune. I think it's particularly applicable. And then there'll be another tune by Andy Hickey and the Merry Maidens, a highly suitable name. And they're going to play us a tune called I'd Rather Be Rambling. Back with you in about 8 or 10 minutes, folks. Thanks for being there.
This is my home, I know where I belong. Now England pride is in my soul. my sons arrive. They know I'm standing on the English land where I am known. India man had a master plan to live calm and civil like the English man. In days of the gentleman he planned to aspire, escape the war and pain of a country on fire. After the Second World War where they split the nation, blaming the people looking savage, black and Asian. A million people dead and so much trouble reigned. People of all religions burnt on man-made slave train. Birth of India, independence without Gandhi. Father of the people, now the country going hungry. Working class man so bereaved and grieved, and so badly shaken that he shook to his knees. So conditioned to believe the English were the civil ones, they flocked to this nation like beggars with their cap in hand. Conditions of the working class found to be pain, while the fat cat screaming all the wealth remained. Promise of protection from the ones who fueled the mayhem. Birth of Pakistan ensured the wars would rage on. India raped as new generation of Englishmen classed up as the British Asian. This is my home, I know where I belong. Now England pride is in my soul. My sons arrive, they know I'm standing on the English land where I am home. One land, your land, my land, our land, sisters and brothers. One land, your land, my land, our land, sisters and brothers. One land, your land, my land, our land, sisters and brothers. One land, your land, my land, our land, England, England. India man was my dad, the child left poor in the shacked out villages of a people reborn, devoured by religion. Look out for the white man who's selling you a dream, pack it off into a foreign land. Now in the 60s it seemed a good idea, the queen smart wish to migrate over here. Like sick fans we danced to this Iran beat, cause swastikas to Hindus cast waters peace. Living the blood man for the promise of prosperity, only to become lowest class ranks of this society. Like Tower of Babel crashing down, the gods rocked. It's fucking immigrants so peace and love can get fucked with. Beatles hangover, economy slides, the old man head down, grafts and grimes. Living blood die, the wings become skinheads. Kick like footballs on the streets like dickheads. Into this bubbly world, bubble baby is born. Surge the birth and now a task out formed. Child in the system that turned into me, a proud Englishman with this Indian seed. You see, this is my home, I know where I belong. Now England pride is in my soul. My sons arrive, they know I'm standing on the English land where I am home. One land, your land, my land, our land, sisters and brothers. One land, your land, my land, our land, sisters and brothers. One land, your land, my land, our land, sisters and brothers. One land, your land, my land, our land, England, England. So where's the civilised nation, where the people in honour? Stiff up a lip now, so why should we bother? Ruled by governments that don't serve the peasants, taxed up to death and now it's far from pleasant. But so perfectly to my dad who joined the tax harvest, milked by governments and despised by the racists. To face it, can't face it when you're facing themselves. Denial of self-hate ain't great for your health. Came in the 60s and he didn't know nothing. Now he's retired in his 60s and he still don't know nothing except governments are good and people are bad. Conditioning is strong, yeah, he warned me of that. But Dickensian born so equally betrayed, spelled out by George Orwell of Big Brother Rage. Yet authority diffused with the spin government lies. People still competing so the system survives. But I'm starting to find that England's no more. One world order starts from European tax laws. But despite propaganda infecting the news, I won't be sold off by the lies of the EU. Because this is my home, I know where I belong. Now England pride is in my soul. My sons arrive, they know I'm standing on the English land where I am home. One land, your land, my land, our land, sisters and brothers. One land, your land, my land, our land, sisters and brothers. One land, your land, my land, our land, sisters and brothers. One land, your land, my land, our land, England, England. England, England, England.
to make my master plan and go where I want to go. Patience, said the wise green man, there's one thing I'd like you to know. Your time is such a precious thing if you keep it on your side. Time won't wait for the dreaming man, don't be tortured by the teasing tide. I'm running in a mouse trio with a dream and an open door. I'd rather be rambling and living by an old man plan. Living my life with the sacrifice to ride all on my own. Been living my life with the throw of a dice, it's all I've ever known. I've run away from the shackles of a love-filled life. I hope someday I'll be blessed with a beautiful wife. I'm running in a mouse wheel with a dream and an open door. I'd rather be rambling and living by an old man's plan. Let's go, Leo.
This is Media Streaming International Radio.